Okay, our last talk of the plant disease session. Q3 Rethor, enhanced resistance against a broad spectrum of fungal pathogens and reniform nematodes in transgenic cotton plants expressing an Arabidopsis NPR1 gene.
Thank you. Now, just to be clear, NPR1 is not the name of a radio station. It's the gene that we have used, and it's the gene is present in most plants, or I should say all plants. But the one that we have used is from Arabidopsis. And let's see. I'll go through this slide a little in detail so you understand what this is all about. In an uninduced plant, NPR1 is in cytoplasm in an oligomeric form, okay? In response to a pathogen attack, salicylic acid levels go up, and also that changes the redox status of the cell. And under those conditions, this oligomeric form of NPR gets reduced to the monomeric form, and the monomeric form can enter the nucleus where it interacts with transcription agents and induces expression of several defense-related genes. So that's the mode of action, okay? Now, during when the plant is not induced under normal conditions, this thing just sits there in an oligomeric form and has no activity. So that's theoretical, okay? So just remember that. So we have introduced this gene into cotton, but others have done this in Arabidopsis, rice, tomato, and few others as they're listed here. And in all these species, the expression of this gene confers resistance not just to fungal pathogens, but also some bacterial pathogens, okay? And so we generated cotton plants expressing this gene, and we analyzed these plants, and they, at least under greenhouse conditions, they appeared normal in their growth and development. And these are the three lines that I'm going to talk about, that line number 5, 19, and 20 that we have used extensively for our disease resistance analysis. Okay, so this graph really shows the response of the plants to salicylic acid treatment. Okay, so as you can see down here, how does this work? Okay, right here, in uninduced state, the activity of one of the defense-related enzyme, chitinase, remains basically at very low level, and it's same in the wild-type plant as well as the transgenic plant. But in response to salicylic acid, this is what we see now. Okay, this cursor doesn't seem to come on. Maybe it doesn't like my touch. Okay, but you can see that the transgenic plant, the level of chitinase goes up dramatically much faster, although wild type also gives the same sort of response, but it's much lower and slightly slower, okay? And same sort of story with the glucanase activity. Okay, this slide just shows that we also done the gene expression analysis and looked at some of the defense-related genes to see how they respond in the transgenic line, NPR1 lines, and the wild-type lines. And we looked at not many, but just 3 or 4 of these genes, and it seems that some of these defense-related genes are induced a little bit faster or stronger in the transgenic lines compared to the wild type lines. And these are the ones that we have marked. And again, we are looking here at PR1 gene, osmotin, glucanase, and chitinase. And this is in response to BTH, by the way. The top panel is in response to BTH, BTH being a synthetic analog of salicylic acid. Okay, we've also done some work where we challenged the plants with fusarium, and looked at the expression of some of the PR genes, and this is shown in the bottom panel. So now we have challenged these transgenic plants with five different fungal pathogens. So we've looked at two seedling diseases, we looked at one foliar disease, we also looked at a couple of wilt diseases, and also reniform nematodes. And I'll show you the results in the next few slides. So this is the result for Rhizoctonia solanae experiment. As you can see that the wild type seedlings show typical symptoms of Rhizoctonia infection. But look at the bottom panel here, and this is one of our transgenic line number 20, and it shows pretty good protection. Okay, we've also done some transcript analysis, and the results are shown here in the bottom left panel. And again, we see stronger and faster induction of the defense genes in the transgenic line. Okay. Now, we have done several experiments with Thalaviopsis black root rot, and the results in the top left, top right panel, you see the results, and this is about 3 weeks after the inoculation of these plants with Thalaviopsis. As you can see, we have some wild-type plants here, shown here. Okay. So wild-type plants, and we have used three different transgenic lines. So as you can see, the wild-type plants show typical symptoms of the disease. Now, even the transgenic plants are infected, as you can see from the dark coloration, but the roots grow out of that infection much better than the ones in the wild-type. And as you can see, that root mass is much higher in the transgenics as well as the shoot mass. We have quantitated these results, and those results are shown in the at the bottom, so both for shoot weight as well as the root weight. Now, first experiment and this second experiment, both of them were done in growth chamber environment. And again, second experiment shows similar results. Again, we have quantitated those, and you can see the shoot weight and the root weight, and we can see a pretty good protection in the transgenic lines. And we also looked at the fungal load in the roots in this particular experiment. And as you can see, that the fungal load is significantly lower in the transgenic lines compared to the wild type. So these two experiments were done in the growth chamber conditions. This third experiment, we have one more, which I'm not going to talk about today. They were both done in the greenhouse conditions. So we let the plants grow much longer so that they can set the balls and everything. And these are the results here. And you can see the plants. This image, probably plants are too close together, so you won't be able to see the balls or everything clearly, but we have quantitated these results, and those are shown in the form of the bar graphs. And as you can see, we see a good response in terms of the shoot length here. And also in the same experiment, we also looked at the root weight, shoot weight, as well as the number of balls per plant and ball weight per plant. And as you can see that in most of these criteria, we see a beneficial effect of the transgene. Okay. So, and also we have done some gene expression analysis. Specifically, what we are seeing is that PR1 gene, LOX1 gene, chitinase gene, and MPD genes are induced much earlier and stronger in response to Thalaviopsis. So we looked at Alternaria alternata, that's a foliar pathogen, and as you can see, the top panel here shows the wild-type leaves. This is a petri dish-based assay where you isolate leaf and inoculate that with the fungus. And as you can see, the leaves are showing typical symptoms of Alternaria disease, but our transgenic leaves are showing pretty good protection. In fact, you can hardly see any sign of infection there. And we have obviously quantitated that, and that's shown in the bar graph. Fusarium, the isolate that we used was FOV11, and as you can see, the cups here in the middle, they're wild-type plants, and typical symptoms of fusarium wilt. The plants are more or less devastated by this disease. But line number 19, on the left side, shows pretty good protection against fusarium, this particular isolate. In fact, this line turned out to be better compared to Delta Pine 444 that Dr. Bell had found some years ago when he screened a lot of commercial lines, and he found this line to be quite resistant to fusarium wilt. And so our transgenic line seemed to perform in this assay slightly better than even Delta Pine 444. So again, we have quantitated these results, and the results are shown in the bar graphs in terms of shoot weight as well as the leaf disease index. So this was one experiment, and we have repeated this experiment, and the results of the second experiment are shown in terms of the bar graph, and again, we see pretty good protection. Also, we looked at chitinase and gluconase activity in the leaves of the plants whose roots were infected with fusarium, and again, we see a bigger and faster induction of these two defense-related enzymes in these transgenic lines. Okay, so we also looked at verticillium. Now, in case of verticillium, we looked at non-defoliating isolates as well as two defoliating isolates. Okay, and the results here are shown on the top left. We have the results are for non-defoliating isolate, and I think the bar graph, the quantitative results are shown in the next slide. But you can clearly see that there is a difference between the two types of plants. Now, so we do see some protection, and the bottom left panel here shows the fifth internode, and we can see the vascular discoloration very clearly in the wild type, but the transgenic line, the stem seems pretty clean. So the progression of disease is not as extensive in the transgenic lines as it is in the wild type lines. So that's what it's showing. Now, as opposed to this kind of positive result that we saw in non-defoliating isolate, we do not see that for the defoliating isolate. And this is, the result is shown in on the top right, and the bottom right shows that internode section here. So we do not see any protection against these isolates. And so these are the results for quantification of the results for two non-defoliating isolates, TS2 and EZ2, and we see good protection in both cases. As opposed to this, when we used the V76 and BA, both are defoliating isolates, we see little or no protection at all. Okay. So now we're quite encouraged by this broad spectrum resistance or protection that we are seeing against several fungal pathogens. So we decided to challenge these plants also with reniform nematodes, and the results from those experiments are shown here in these graphs. And again, we used two different lines, 19 and 20, and we looked at, we counted the number of nematodes in the soil at the termination of experiment, which was, I think, about 3 or 4 weeks, something like that. And we see much lower count of nematodes in the soil where the transgenic plants were growing. And also looked at the number of balls per plant, and those are shown in this bottom left graph. Again, we see significantly higher number of balls that were set on the transgenic lines. We see on the bottom right, we have the results for ball weight per plant. And again, we see significantly higher ball weight. And also positioning of the ball, also we see some differences between the transgenic and wild type. So, okay, to summarize the results, we have seen broad spectrum resistance to 5 different fungal pathogens and reniform nematodes. The transformants under the greenhouse conditions look normal in their growth and development. We do not see any pleiotropic effects of expressing this transgene, which is the case in a lot of cases where you have some gene you introduce that confers disease resistance, but plants may have some issues. At least we haven't seen anything serious. And we have grown, by the way, we have grown these lines in the field on a very small scale, just few plants, just to see if they will even survive the real life conditions. And they do. They survive, they produce normal level of cotton, and we don't have all the results quantitated, so I can't talk about that right now. But they have been able to survive the field conditions. And so NPR1 gene promises to be a very useful tool that we can use to achieve broad spectrum resistance if we use it in a more controlled manner. Say, for example, we may have it expressed only in the roots or have it expressed in response to some pathogen attack. So you can even kind of limit if there is any other pleiotropic effect that we haven't seen. So that's where things stand right now. And these are the people who have actually done the work on the left side. These are some of the research associates and technician. We have had a lot of help and guidance from Dr. Bell he's and Dr. Stepanovic. And also Dr. Cannelly and Jay Shah, who is at North Texas University, provided us with the gene. And we're certainly grateful for the financial support from Cotton Inc. and other agencies. So I'll stop here and be happy to answer any questions. Yes.
So there's there can be crosstalk between different plant defensive pathways as well.
Sure.
And then you could have the possibility for conferring resistance against many other things. I'm sure. Have you done any insect trials? Is where my end.
Well, I didn't want to say it because I'm pretty conservative guy. I don't like to talk until I'm pretty sure. But we have done a couple of experiments. Again, this is in collaboration with Dr. Eubanks on cotton aphids. And in fact, these two lines are showing some tolerance resistance to cotton aphids. So that's one thing we have tried. And there is some reason to believe that NPR1 may be involved in some and the resistance to aphids also. So there is some reason to believe that may be helpful. But we still need to confirm these studies. We have done two, so which is good. I would like to do some more work before we talk about that. Yes.
I have a question about extract. For example,
yes.
Australia.
On these plants. Not intentionally, we haven't tried all those things yet, but they, as I said, we have put them in field conditions, and so they have faced whatever normal heat drought which we had in 2011, pretty bad, and, you know, I mean, they were just, you know, they responded similarly to any other or the non-transgenic plants. In fact, we didn't see any issues in terms of abiotic stresses. Yes?
What do you think it is about the foliating isolate that doesn't seem to?
Obviously, the mechanism for defoliating strain isolates is probably much different, different pathway, and it'll be something, you know, something quite amazing if this thing really provided protection to everything.
Yeah.
But Yeah, we don't know. That's the honest answer right now.
We think there is a toxin involved with people eating nicely.
Right.
That really runs the pre-ammonia levels out of sight in the cotton plant.
Yeah.
It would expect it. It would suggest a glutamine synthetase. But about the time I started working on this rigorously a few years ago, we did show there was a unique glutamine dehydrogenase in the fungus, which would allow it to use such a toxin. But the bronze wolf popped up about that time, and my graduate student, postdoc that was working on it got a job, so that sort of went into the file thing at that point in time. But I think when toxins became a major part of the pathogenicity, you'll find that, like the NPR change, probably are not going to work.
Yeah. So you mentioned there you have a number of plants in the field,
yes.
But the wild type was also planted side by side.
Oh, yes, right.
And next so year. Yield.
We're not seeing any significant differences. I don't have the numbers with me right now, but we're not seeing anything drastic.
Were the wild type attacked by anything, or does this have to happen to be just a healthy
time? Now that they were attacked just as badly as other plants.
No.
We actually look for that. In fact, there was some reason to believe, again, based on there's a lot of stuff in the literature, if you believe everything, and we certainly believe that these plants, although they show tolerance to these fungal pathogens and reniform nematodes, they may actually be more susceptible to insects. There is salicylic acid, jasmonic acid, there is interaction, and there is kind of interplay between those two, and there is some reason to believe that they would be more susceptible. In fact, we did not see that, and that reflects, so this is based just on visual observations, as well as the yield results, that's what really counts at the end, so we didn't see big.
And the they were discussed like Dr. Bell?
Sorry?
They weren't stunted like Dr. Bell's
plant? No.
It's hard to say. They were not planted on the reservoir field. My stuff was fine too over
Thank you to all our speakers. We appreciate it, and we'll see you in New Orleans.